Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another edition of The Winning Drive. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, joined by fellow Lifetime Longhorn CJ Vogel, and also joined by the coach, former high school football coach at Burnett, Capel, Brownwood, Belton, Rotan, played college football at Abilene Christian, also coached there multiple stints on the staff at the University of Texas as well, and now you can catch his work at, boom, right there, ShipleyRanches.com. It's Coach Bob Shipley. What's going on, Coach? How you doing?
Man, it's hot. It's just hot.
Yeah, that's that weather forecast. It's hot. That's all y'all need to know. You don't need no details. It's hot.
I just know we got some folks down on the Texas coast got a possibility of a little hurricane maybe coming in.
Ooh, later. That ain't good.
Well, if we don't get the wind, if we just get the rain, they're forecasting San Antonio may get 10, 11 inches. So
ooh, they might have just hit Coach's house.
Oh, man.
That hurricane came quick.
Yeah.
There we go.
Hey, man, y'all be safe out there, and y'all stay cool out there, man. Stay hydrated out there, because hey, Coach Wright, man, it's hot.
But I won't be there. I'll be coming to you from somewhere, I don't know, Del Bahamar or something, Bahamas on Thursday. So I'll let you know how things are doing out in the.
Yeah, Coach, we'll be dying to know. As we bear the heat, you just dip your toes down in that sand and that beach, all right?
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, yeah, that's right, Coach. I don't even know, Coach. You ain't, if you're going to the Bahamas, you ain't got to work. You can just enjoy the beach in the Bahamas, man. That's how you know Coach is dedicated. That's a real coach right there. We appreciate it, Coach.
It's always off, back in the Bahamas.
Off season, baby.
Yeah. If I was in the Bahamas, I'm not sure y'all would see me. I'm not sure. I'd probably have to. I love y'all, but I don't know if y'all see me in the Bahamas, but that's why we love Coach. All right. We got a lot to get into on the show, of course. Big news today, of course, the commitment of Dia Bell. We'll talk about it, 2026 quarterback in that class, of course. So we'll get to that. That's where we'll start the latest news on the newest Longhorn. Yes, Blake, Dia Bell, the newest horn. Yeah, QBU continues. I want to let CJ just kind of get into it. We'll start there. There's some other topics we'll get into. But, of course, all of your questions, your comments, we'll address as many of them, those as we can. Please, super chats, jump to the front of the line. You can interrupt the show at any time. You know how that goes. All right. Let's start with CJ and your thoughts on Dia Bell, CJ. That's the big news, man. It broke earlier today. We've already been on it, done a live stream on it already, put out a couple of videos to give you our thoughts on Dia Bell. So go check those out on the On Texas Football channel. But give me your thoughts, kind of how this recruitment went down. It was between him and Troy Hune, a lot of people thought, as that QB1 in that 2026 class. Turns out to be Dia Bell. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's exactly how it went down. You know, Texas was going out west, or they're going out to Florida for their 2026 quarterback. And we found out today, well, it was going to be Dia Bell for the Texas class. And I thought, this is a very talented quarterback. He's a very natural passer. You know, he's a basketball guy. Obviously, his father was Roger Bell, so the athleticism comes from that side of the family, a 9 or 10 year NBA veteran, all defensive NBA player as well. So that's where the athleticism comes from. You see his ability to get outside of the pocket, make throws on the run. He can kind of take what you see in a point guard in that distribution of the rock. He has that same mindset of get the ball to wherever it needs to go any way that I can. And that's one of the big traits that I am a big fan of his. Again, it just kind of feels natural when he's on the move, and he's a good athlete again. So that's, I think Texas came on a little stronger earlier this year. Obviously, he was on campus for a spring football practice by himself earlier in that spring window. Returned again for the June 1st elite camp. That was when both him and Troy Hune were throwing together in what ended up being kind of that final competition for A.J. Milwee and Steve Sarkisian to evaluate and come to their conclusion for which quarterback in the 26th cycle would be their guy. Obviously, today we found out it was Dia Bell. Publicly, behind the scenes, he let it be known to the Texas staff about 2 weeks ago that he was wanting to commit to the Texas staff, just wanted to wait until it was his turn and get to his, you know, kind of side of things for when he wanted to go public with it. Obviously, that was today. Great addition to the Texas class. Again, he's a guy that will attract national talent. He's a five-star caliber guy. I think one of the services ranks him as such. But when you are a national guy with a pedigree of an NBA father, you have the name, very similarly to what we saw with Arch Manning, maybe not obviously to that extent, but other players will want to play with Dia Bell. And I think when you are Texas trying to recruit the Deep South a little bit more, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida's a place that you see a lot of recruiting in at the moment. Diabel's going to help in that case as well.
Yeah, no, he is. He's talented, man. There's no doubt about it. Coach, you get a chance to look at some of his highlights. You probably watched them a little bit yourself. What are your thoughts on just the skill set Texas bringing in with Diabel?
Well, first of all, you got to realize the kid's a sophomore in this film. That's unbelievable. I mean, you know, really. And one of the things that jumped off the tape to me is, I wonder if we're recruiting any of his receivers. I mean, the guy's got some. He's got some go-to guys. Number one is a GoDaddy. I don't even know. I didn't even look those guys up, but I'm telling you, he's got some guys. You know, he throws really well on the run. I watched Patrick Mahomes. I went through all of his high school film, and really, he reminds me of a refined Patrick Holmes, Mahomes coming out of high school. Mahomes' dad, Pat, played with my younger brother, Steven, at high school in Lindale High School, and had several quarterback offers, decided to get drafted, go baseball, got drafted by the Twins, had a long career in MLB. But anyway, same pedigree, you know, professional athletes or dads, they remind me a lot of each other. His accuracy, I'd like to look some more of his raw film. You know, you're looking at the highlights here, of course.
Yeah.
But the accuracy that we're seeing with him throwing the ball on the run is very Mahomes-like, you know, to me. I think, you know, you got to remember he's a sophomore. I look at his footwork and things. He needs a little tweaking on his footwork, when he's just in a drop back situation. That'll come with time. He still has two more years of high school football to go, but I think it's an incredible get. I don't think he wants to run it. I think he wants to try to throw it if he can, which is smart. You know, that he just has to be careful to try to stay healthy. But with the kind of weapons he has out there, he doesn't have to run it a bunch. He can throw it. But I think it's a huge get. You know, when you have a dual threat guy like this in Sark's offense, it's just going to – you know, this thing is just feeding itself. It's monster. You know, we got a chance to sign three five-star receivers this year, and it just feeds itself. And this is just a great example of the momentum that we have right now in recruiting.
Hey, CJ, you coach knows receivers. And so coach was just talking about the receivers he's throwing to. He's right, though, right? Aren't there a bunch of studs? Or I mean, you know better than we do.
Yeah, absolutely. Number one is Malachi Toney, 2026 wide receiver, about 5'9", 5'10", currently committed to Miami. So he's got some dudes to throw to. And especially at American Heritage, we know the, you know, kind of the history of development and Division I guys that have come out of that program. He's obviously the next up for Diabel, right there. Really talented guy. Patrick Surtain actually came out of there. He was the most recent five-star. He and his dad, I believe, his dad was a coach down there, I believe. Pat Surtain now with the Broncos, I believe, but had a very successful college career, was a first-round pick. Again, this is a great spot to be in if you're Texas. We've talked about it. You get guys from Houston, from Saraland, obviously Arch Manning. All of these guys on roster have different pulls in different areas of where Texas likes to recruit. And we saw it firsthand. We know what Quinn Ewers can do. We know now what Arch Manning can do. And I think Trey Owens is the guy that might get lost in the fold here, but shouldn't be the case, right? We just saw him throw for about 250, 260 yards in the spring game after being on campus for about a month and a half. So the way that Sarkisian and Milwee have been evaluating quarterbacks, and coach, I thought you nailed it on the head. He looks to get the ball down the field with his arm. You know, he can run. He's a great athlete, no doubt about it. But as we've seen with a number of the ways that Sarkisian and these guys have targeted quarterbacks, it's all about the arm. It's all about making every throw on the field. And that's basically what you have to do for Sarkisian and this group to even target you in the first place. So very encouraging for this as well. Coach mentioned it again, two more years of development before Sarkisian and Milwee even get their hands on him. That's encouraging. I can't wait to see what he'll look like this fall going into his senior season as well. And then, of course, what kind of numbers he'll put up there. But real quick, AJJ Sports wanted to mention this. Was he one of the highs? Jerry has four outstanding highs right now. I can tell you right now, this was not one of them. So, the fun should continue going if you're a fan of Texas recruiting. This is obviously a great addition to 2026, but 2025 is where you're starting to look at most of these dominoes starting to fall, especially with the outstanding highs in this class.
Yeah, Jerry Hamilton, of course, the great Jerry Hamilton at G Hamilton OTF. He points out that he's used to throwing to a lot of speed demons too. We know Sark has a type at receiver. They're the speedsters. And Coach pointed out he's throwing to some studs. He said that 2026, Brandon Bennett went 10-4 in the 100 this spring. That's one of his wide receivers. And Zamari Sanders went 20.50 in the 200 this spring. So they got some world-class speed he's throwing to, man. So he's blessed to be throwing some great wide receivers, but he's got a lot of talent. And I agree with you guys. I often try to, you know, look at the X-Man ability of a quarterback. What sets them apart, right? What is their special elite tool and trait in their skill set? And when I watched his film, I got my notes right here. I wrote this: it throws the ball extremely accurately on the run. Like, he's very accurate, accurate with the football, throwing on the run. Love that about his game. Can throw from different platforms, different angles, and his second reaction skills to extend the play. But as Coach mentioned, he could just decide to take the yardage, scramble, but that's not what he does. There's a maturity in this game that when the play breaks down, his second reaction is to extend the play to get deeper into his progressions. And then it almost it combines and compounds with his other, like I said, elite trait, which is throwing the football on the run. So when he extends the play and breaks down, and he gets outside the pocket, he's at times even deadlier. And that kind of goes back to Coach's point about Patrick Mahomes, who's great at sack avoidance. And then once he gets outside the pocket, he's just as deadly. Yes, he can beat you with his functional mobility, but much more often he is going to look down the field on a broken play, scramble drill, and look to hurt you with his arm. You see a lot of that in this young man. And I love his throwing motion. I mean, he's got a really quick throwing motion. He's decisive, very accurate with the football overall. That's not really much to dislike about this young man's game. And he's played a lot of different sports when he was younger. I still remember Bill Walsh talking about, quarterbacks and what he looks for in QBs. And one of the things he said he looked for, he was talking to Jim Harbaugh about this, and he said, I look for athletic instincts. And he said, part of the athletic instincts is, he said, quote, I asked Bill Walsh what he meant by that. And he said, it means he's could be the best athlete in the entire high school. He could go make the basketball team. He could be a sixth man. He could make the soccer team. He could swim. He could field balls from center field. He could be a shortstop, probably pitch on the baseball team. This young man, you know, not that he did all that, but he played tennis, basketball, football, baseball, soccer. There's an athletic intelligence to him, to his skill set overall. I think that shines through as well with him just as a player. It goes back to what CJ mentioned about the point guard thing. Like, kind of feels like he's a point guard out there. That kind of goes back to that Bill Walsh quote about athletic instincts. This young man's got him.
Rod, he averaged 21 points on the basketball court as a freshman before giving up the sport of basketball and opting to say, oh, yeah, now I'm a quarterback. Let me focus solely on, dropping back, getting my reads right. But 21 points as a freshman on American Heritage. That's pretty significant. Of course, his father, Rajah Bell, was a multi-time All-NBA defensive player. I wonder if he'd be able to score on his dad now. I guess not, since he's picking up the pigskin over the round rock. But, Coach, I wanted to bring this up because I thought Rod brought up the great points about the speed that he's playing with right now. Texas recruiting a lot of speed. You know, in this 2025 class, we've talked about it a number of times, whether it be the 10-3, 10-4 of DeCorian Moore. We know that Texas wants Kelshon Johnson, Jamie French. All these guys are around anywhere from 10-3 to 10-6 to 10-7. Obviously, Ryan Wingo's a big-time speedster as well. But when you're playing with this speed and you're acclimated early to leading receivers, I mean, as a guy who's been around the game of football for a while, that's not something that is very easily, learned as a quarterback. You either understand where to put the rock, or it's going to be a long, slow, frustrating progression to get to that spot. I say frustrating because wide receivers don't like reaching back behind them. They don't like the balls over the top of them. And, when they're going over the middle of the field, that's a great skill to have this early as well, playing with that level of speed, because it's going to translate to the next level.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to this: maturity. You know, for his age to be that mature, making those kind of throws, those kind of decisions, it's just kind of scary to know what this guy is going to be like when he comes on the 40 acres. If we can keep him, that's another thing. You know, Coach Brown, you say, you know, getting them to commit, that's the easy part. Keeping them is the hard part, you know. But if things continue to go, you know, if we continue to ride the wave that we're riding right now with momentum, I think that's, you know, going to be a good possibility. And remember this, they're, what is it, the last 10 years, they're ranked number three in putting players high school. They're the third ranked high school in putting players in the NFL in the United States in the last 10 years. He's going to have talent around him. I thought, well, maybe his offensive line's not. I started watching his offensive line. They're good too. I mean, it's just, you know, he just avoids. But to have the maturity level that he has, not to scramble, not to just tuck it and run, you know, that's maturity, as Rod was saying, avoiding the sack and then continuing to look for, you know, other guys down the field, maybe as the pocket breaks down, DBs are coming off their receivers to try to contain him. That's Patrick Mahomes. That's what Patrick Mahomes does so well. Always has his eyes downfield. And this kid is really exciting. To me, it's like having a 12th player on offense. It really is. When you have a quarterback that can run, now all of a sudden defensively, you're having to defend really another guy almost out there. You know, you usually don't count the quarterback as a guy that, but, you know, people have to kind of spy sometimes on a quarterback who has a capability of running. Now you're taking a guy out of the pass defense. Mm-hmm. So I'm just incredibly excited about this guy. I think it's a huge get for us. I just hope we can hang on to this guy because he's going to have a huge future.
Yeah. No, that's a good point, Coach, about that's why they literally call it a plus one, right? The quarterback may run like he's a plus one in the running game because he's an added guy got to worry about defending. That's no question. Great stuff there, Coach. Okay, so here's and Matthew found it because Matthew's always working hard behind the scenes. Idea Bell tweet here that I think would be – so Idea Bell celebrating here, you know, and look at the reply, the reply here at the top of the replies. Interesting. Yeah, Matthew, Matthew doing investigative work behind the scenes. Well done there, Matthew. Well done. I mean, listen, can I just throw this out there? We talked about this yesterday, and CJ, you know, I want to get your thoughts, obviously, but I want to ask Coach because Coach was involved with a lot of different, you know, kind of recruiting events when you were at Texas in different ways, and DeCorian Moore reportedly brought 11 members of his family to the recruiting visit this past weekend, 11, including grandma. All right. Including grandma. Now you don't just, I gotta tell you, you'll just be bringing grandma to stuff like that, Coach.
There. When you bring grandma for the coaching staff, that's great news. Now, you know, you got to win grandma.
Exactly. So Coach, have you ever heard of somebody bringing that many players? No.
I've never seen that many on any recruiting trips over my 5 years on the 40 acres, but I think it's wonderful. I think it's obvious that he's very serious about the university, and, you know, hopefully they were. And look at Sark, man. The guy is just he's an incredible recruiter, and when you talk to him, he's Mac Brownish, and that he makes you feel like you're the most important person in his life at that moment.
Mac with better shoes.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's fitted up, Rod.
Yeah, I know. Sark's shoe game is next level now. It is, man. It is, no doubt.
Hey, Sark was like, I'm sorry, CJ. Rod, do you remember Fantasy Island? It's kind of like.
Oh, yeah.
They get off of that plane and they come in, you know, and we got all the cars out there. They're revving them up. And then, you know, you walk through the victory line of cars and then. And then there's the man from Fantasy Island in his white pants and orange sports coat waiting to welcome you into Fantasy Island, baby. He's got it going, doesn't he?
Yeah, he do, man. He does. I ain't going to lie. The recruiting business, they look a whole lot shinier than they did when I was there. But it was still really nice when I was there. But, man, they do look like they're rolling out the red carpet. There's no question. So, that's great news. I mean, basically you have the players almost recruiting each other. And we always say players are the best recruiters. They're the best recruiters you can get. And they were seeing that now the players that they're bought in, they're helping other players buy in, helping other recruits buy in to the culture and the message as well. Idea Bell. I would say it's also about Idea Bell, but we'll obviously talk more about it. We got some questions here about Idea Bell and about recruiting. And one thing about that I really liked about his game is what's his second reaction ability. And we've talked about this, about how he can extend the play. And, you know, I think Sark more and more is starting to appreciate a player who has that ability at quarterback to improvise, to be off schedule. Because Sark wants his offense to operate on schedule. Ideally, he wants what he had Mac Jones in that 2019 season there, where everything was on schedule. Mac Jones, I think it was less than 15% of the time he had to go to his second and third read deep into his progression. It was on time, on schedule, and it was operating with peak efficiency. That's ideally what he wants. But the truth is, as you know, Coach, that's not how football works a lot of time. I mean, yes, great, but that was one of the greatest offenses in the history of college football. A lot of the time, you know, most of the time, you have things that are going to happen that were not anticipated, and the quarterback's going to solve problems on the field real time, and sometimes pre-snap, sometimes post-snap. That's that field general coming into play. And I go back to Bill Walsh, because Bill Walsh is known. Bill Walsh had the all-time great quote. And by the way, Sark is one of these few people. Very few people can coach the quarterback, and even fewer can evaluate them. Sark is one of those few people. We'll give Sark credit on that. But this is what Bill Walsh said about basically instinctive, spontaneous response. He basically said in his quarterback evaluation, even he, the great Bill Walsh, acknowledged, I'm just ignorant to some things that are going to happen on the football field, and I can't quantify it in my evaluation of a player. I can't. That's that it quality we talk about. He got it. Can't really describe it. Hard to quantify it, but you know it when you see it, right? And this is his description of it. He said, it's an instinctive, spontaneous response to situations that develop in games. He said, this accounts for 10 to 15% of the plays in games, but it makes a phenomenal difference in the result of the game. He said, these are plays that determine a quarterback's greatness. His instinctive, spontaneous, natural response to a crisis situation. And you'll have how many of these coached throughout a game? I don't know. Maybe 10 to 15 of these kind of crisis plays. Maybe they're on third down. Maybe they're in the red zone, money downs. And you need your quarterback to go out there and make a play and be the field general and solve the problems. And I think Sark, with some of these players that I'm seeing, even the second reaction plays, I think he's starting to appreciate that. I'm not saying he's going to the Bill Walsh quote, even though he quotes Bill Walsh about it too. I think you have to appreciate that, because I think that's part of sack avoidance. I think that's part of, you know, the second reaction plays. I think that's part of guys being able to throw outside on the run, off platform throws, the understanding that, hey, man, I can't solve every problem for the quarterback. I need them to go out there at times and just be a playmaker and make plays.
Hey, do you think on the 4th and 7, BY, you think there's ever any intention of him throwing that ball?
That's a great question. Wasn't it a built-in basic scramble for him? Then we found out later Coach Davis kind of – I have to find it then. I want to say they've done – like a documentary about that, and Coach Davis talked about that exact play, and that VY within the structure of the play, there is an option he can just take off and scramble because it'll be cleared out for him based on the route
combination. That's that you're talking about. The it that knows when to tuck it and run, and knows when to try to throw it.
Exactly. Yes. Amen to that, brother. Did Vincent Paul have it? UT boy, he had it, and he had so much of it, he was oozing it. And he could sprinkle it on others around him and give them a little bit of it for the time being. They take some of his. He had so much of it. Oozing that it quality. There you go. But yeah, that's what I love about D.O. Bell's game, though. That's some stuff I don't think you can coach, and it just kind of comes natural to him. UT boy, once again, appreciate the super chat. Coach is stockpiling, says UT boy. He is, gentlemen. I mean, you look at that quarterback room. I mean, we haven't seen a quarterback room this gifted and talented ever, maybe. And maybe you can go back to – when you had, you know, a Chris Sims in there and a young VY thrown in there and a Chance Mock, but I don't know if they were this talented as it is right now. And obviously he's not on campus yet, but just looking at the way that Sark recruits, CJ, I don't know if there's a better quarterback room in the country. And I don't know if there will be for the next few years the way Sark is stockpiling this thing.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with it. And, you know, it reminds me of when Lincoln Riley was at Oklahoma, just winning Heisman after Heisman with number one draft pick after number one draft pick. And I know they didn't actually end up winning a national title, but those teams were ultra competitive. And in big games, those quarterbacks were oftentimes the game changers. That's what I'm seeing right now with Texas. And, of course, Texas doesn't have to deal with Lincoln Riley north of the Red River now. Right. Luckily. But he's still got those guys. Right. Caleb Williams just did it. They've got Miller Moss looking to take that next jump at USC under Lincoln Riley. So if you look at it from a guy from the perspective of who's going to have a quarterback stocked, you know, room at all times, it's got to be Lincoln. And it's got to be Steve Sarkisian. Those are the two guys. You know, you're going to have good, talented quarterbacks at Ohio State. Alabama will have their guys under Kalen DeBoer. But right now, when you look at who's got the top five-star guys in the country, Quinn Ewers, Arch Manning, KJ Lacy's in that conversation. We've seen already immediately that the development of Trey Owens after just 2 months on campus. And now another guy for 2026 with Dia Bell. And that's a five-star caliber guy. So I don't think Texas will ever lack at the quarterback position. They might actually have an issue with having too much riches at that spot. But, hey, that's a great problem to have. The other thing I wanted to mention, and Rod and Coach, I want y'all's opinion on this, but you could look across a number of positions right now for the foreseeable future and just say, yeah, that room is going to be in great hands because of the way that Texas is recruiting and playing on the field. We've talked about it with the offensive line and Kyle Flood and the room that he started to build and develop. Obviously, quarterback just went over them, but wide receivers in the mix for 3 5-star guys this year. Tashard Choice, we know what he can do going just about anywhere in the country to pluck and add a guy from Arizona, from Florida, that just went out to Louisiana to add another guy in the 2025 class. So the offensive side of the ball specifically, I'm looking at it saying, yeah, there might not be a weakness of this entire offensive side of the ball in terms of where they can go out and just add pieces from. Jeff Banks, of course, tight end spot. Jordan Washington's been a diamond in the rough this entire spring and is also, Jeff Banks, I mean, probably your most important one-on-one heavy hitter when it comes to recruiting on the staff. So I'm very encouraged for the future of Texas football. Obviously, winning is going to help. Developing for the NFL is going to help. But at the end of the day, there's not a weak spot on this offensive side of the ball in terms of where they can, you know, kind of be hit on a little bit in terms of recruiting weakness.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. It's especially on the offensive side, like O-line, QB, wide receiver. They are, in my opinion, and I think they're working on it on defense, and they're working on the edges on defense in that way. See them doing some of that in the defensive backfield, what they've done on the O-line and now at wide receiver going forward, and, of course, at quarterback. It is as impressive as any program in the country right now. Okay, let's get to a couple of questions here, and then I got a topic that I want to bring up with you guys, because Sark did an interview with Joe Klatt recently, too. He revealed a couple of things I thought were pretty interesting in that interview. I want to get you guys' thoughts on. So we'll get to that in a second. But first, Cisco Diaz, thank you, Cisco, for the question. He wants to know this, and I'm curious as well, CJ. He wants to know, why do some services have Dia as a 5-star?
Yeah, I think it's exactly what Coach just hit on, right? It's that natural ability to get the ball out off schedule, you know, kind of improvise at a level that you don't see at the sophomore level in high school, right? It's one of those things where you either have it or you don't. And right now, I think the services doing the early evaluations for 2026 quarterbacks. And again, it's not an exact science. You know, quarterback evaluation is one of the more tough, difficult things to do in all of the world of football. But right now, he kind of has those traits that lend to being a very special quarterback. And again, I think you see it whenever you turn on the game film, when he escapes the pocket, it's not just out-athleting people, which I think sometimes you get kind of enamored by that when you evaluate quarterbacks. It's the arm. And I think it's that natural ability to distribute the rock with pressure in front of them, with a clean pocket, to anticipate and lead. That's something that I think is very valuable. And I think the early evaluations certainly recognize that.
Yep. No, I agree with you on that. I love his game, and I can see why somebody would bump him up to be a 5-star. As Sark says, that doesn't matter to him. That's not what he's concerned about. And we even saw that with the Trey Owens signing. He was on Trey Owens when he wasn't necessarily as hyped. I know he wasn't the Houston offensive player of the year yet and seemed to get on that one pretty early. So when it comes to quarterbacks, I trust in Sark on that one. All right, thank you for the question there, Cisco. Appreciate it. I got one here that I want to jump on, and I hope I can find it because I love. Oh, here it is. This is from Nayman Roberts. It was in the chat here. It says, "Ed Rod, as great as a recruiter and play caller as Sark is, does the babysitting of Sark hurt the quarterbacks in the NFL?" I'm assuming you're talking about the babysitting of quarterbacks, like at the college level. I'm assuming that's the case. If I'm wrong, Nayman, please specify and clarify for me. I think the issue is, at least from Quinn's perspective, from what I've heard, Sark's offense is it's a compilation. It's so inundated with like cheat codes and all these different force multipliers to try to overload the circuitry of the defense. Uses a ton of pre-snap motions and shifts. Probably should use more, actually. I've said that before. But you're probably close to 60% of the time using pre-snap motion shifts. Play action pass rates. I mean, Quinn last season had more play action pass dropbacks. He led the Power 5 in play action pass dropbacks last year. So tons of play action pass. Talking about just the deception-based passing game. RPOs, or he calls his offense an RPO-based passing game. So RPO throws are a big part of the offense. And then screens are about 12 to 15% of the offense. So once you combine the play action pass with the screen game, with the RPO throws, you're talking about 65% of your passing game. It's roughly deception-based passing game, which is still skill in it, sleight of hand. That's why Sark says one of the physical traits he looked for in the quarterback is quick hands. Yep. That's because of his, you know, the RPO game, mesh point manipulation, play action pass, the screen game. You got to have a savvy quarterback that's sleight of hand. And actually, Quinn Ewers is great at that. But when you strip that all away, let's strip it all away. Strip all that down. Let's go just, it's third and long. And for those who don't statistically, third and long is when the odds finally flip in favor of the defense. In every other third and short, third and medium, the odds are in favor of the offense. Statistically, they're going to convert. They don't always do, but the odds are in their favor. The odds finally got to go toward the defense where they're more than 50% chance to win that down when it's third and long. And third and longer you get, the harder it is. I'll give you an example. In the NFL, how many passes do you think converted a third and 10-plus yards to gain in the NFL? The quarterback that led the NFL in that category was C.J. Stroud, and I believe Jared Goff, and he was at 14.
I was going to say 12.
Exactly. Most people are like, that's really low. Yeah, it's less than one a game. Because when you get to third and 10, you strip away. That's no deception. You can't don't fake an RPO or fake a play at your pass. You straight drop back. We know exactly what you want to do. And you can't quick game either. You got to go past three-step drops. Then you drop all the way back in the pocket. We know exactly what you're going to do. The predictability factor becomes huge because the defense knows what you're going to do. And then the defenders can pin their ears back, come out to the quarterback, and the DBs know, all right, they got to get to a certain depth. So I ain't got to guard the quick game. I can just guard vertical routes and I can guard these chains here. So for Quinn, that's what NFL scouts want to see from him this year. One of the things, a lot of things they want to see, but one thing they want to see from him is just in straight drop back situations. I'll give you Pro Football Focus says that in play action pass, Pro Football Focus grade, in play action pass situations, Quinn at the 8th best play action pass, Pro Football Focus grade. He was great in that situation. RPO in RPO grades, he was he was top 5 among quarterbacks on RPO throws. Sorry, he was 2nd in Pro Football Focus grade on RPO throws. But on straight dropbacks, strip away all the deception, 83rd in Pro Football Focus passing grade on non-play action passes. So they want to see him be better on just straight dropbacks. And I think Sark has a cheat code for him. And Coach and I actually went over this. Well, in football theory, go back and check it out. A few weeks ago, the 6-0 line package, strangely enough, you go look at it, CJ, this year, there was a huge change in it. He lowered the play action pass rates in the 6-0 line package, Big 11, Big 12, and increased the straight dropback pass rate. Disproportionately higher than in other personnel groupings. So I think he's looking at the same thing going, all right, you know what? Let's give him an added layer of pass protection, an added layer of protection, and have him do straight drop back from the 6-0 line package. So what you've seen is Sark make the adjustment that, all right, if he's not great in the non-deception drop back passing game, then let's just add another layer for him, give him more time to throw, and then now scheme open better routes downfield. And it actually has worked out of the 6-0 line package. So that's one of the things they want to see. So I don't know if that's answered your question about Sark babysitting, but that's kind of – everybody thinks Sark's offense is so, you know, progressive and it's so modern, and it is, and it is quarterback-friendly because it just – It basically clarifies and defines everything for a quarterback. All of the motions and shifts forces a defense to have to commit and have to show their hand. They have to show exactly what their responsibilities and what the roles are in the defense. And then that allows Sark to learn the rules of the defense. And once Sark learns the rules of your defense, he will habitually break them. He will break them. He's an habitual line stepper. He'll break the rules of your defense or force you to violate them over and over again. And that's the kind of the beauty of his engineering matchups. But on the flip end of that, NFL coaches want to see, hey, give me the straight drop back and let me see if he can do that. And CJ Stroud to be able to lead the NFL in that category as a rookie is just mind blowing. Shows you that guy he's on a whole nother level, because that's supposed to be one of the hardest things to do in football.
Yeah, I think there's a reason why they want to move that onside kick to what, a 4th and 15 or 4th and 20, Rod? Mm-hmm. Get that idea, but I mean, it completely takes away the element of surprise, and it is probably worth the conversation of whether or not Sarkisian's offense translates from college to the NFL in terms of what to expect from the quarterbacks, because like you said, it is a very, very favorable quarterback system. But at the end of the day, on Texas football only really cares about what happens at the college level, right? That's nice for us, but it's worth the conversation, no doubt. One thing I will say for Quinn Ewers is that's always been what he's been needed to improve on, is going from that first read to a second read to his check down. We saw it a little bit last year, that step from, if the first read isn't there, well, let me find out where my dump down is. Well, this year, the expectation is go from first to second and then to your dump. Texas did a great job finding the running backs, finding tight ends, whether it be Gunnar Helm or Jatavion Sanders underneath. Of course, big plays from Jonathan Brooks, Jaden Blue, some of these guys out of the backfield. The question is, if you continue to stress defenses vertically, there should still be opportunities to get the ball down the field, even if that first option isn't there. Added protection will help. The dance, the dressing on plays will help. What's that look like when Sarkisian just says, no, we're playing four out, four verts, and Quinn, you got to make the play. That's where I think, like you said, that's where that next step comes from.
Right. I would also like to add, when Rod and I were talking about this on Football Theory, the 6 offensive linemen allows you more time for protection. Without a doubt, probably I would say the number one highest completion in about any passing game is a quick pass, you know. Definitely. Just a quick pass. But the second is probably going to be double move routes. And in order to get 3rd and 10 or 3rd and 15, sometimes you've got to have a little double move route. The 6th offensive lineman allows you the time to throw that double release. And you give our quarterbacks time to throw a double move, let a receiver do a double move. It's going to be, you know, if they have the chance, especially the receivers we had last season. I'm hoping the ones this season can do what the ones last. But you couldn't stop those guys on double moves. I mean, you just couldn't stop them. And if you have the time, if he has the time, I think with the 6-man offensive line, you'll see that percentage, pass percentage completion go up.
All right. Now, no, that's good stuff. And in case, Naaman Roberts, I did not answer your question at all, or we did not, even though that was a very thorough and entertaining breakdown analysis. In case you were talking about something totally different, like he's babysitting too many quarterbacks, like stockpiling them kind of thing. Maybe that's the babysitting you're talking about. As long as you're sitting guys in the NFL, nobody cares. It's a running back room situation right now for Texas. Like, why would Jonathan Brooks stay there and wait his turn? Because he recognized what Bijan and Rojo were able to do. And even with two running backs share that backfield. So as long as you can help me achieve my NFL dream and get drafted really high, and Jonathan Brooks was still considered the top running back on the board, I think they'll give you the benefit of the doubt. And I think they'll exercise some patience. But if you didn't have the NFL pipeline going, then it's really tough to do. I think now it's in such a shape because they can babysit, if you want to call it, because they're proving they can send guys to the league now. And I think the same thing will be true. And we were doing that at you know, I think, and now it's a different area, obviously, in the transfer portal. But think about it. Texas had a hard time holding on to quarterbacks even before the transfer portal, the modern era of the transfer portal. All right. We still had quarterbacks that were transferring and leaving. So it's really hard to stockpile that specific position. But as long as Sark has proven that he can send quarterbacks to the NFL, and that's what I think we're talking about, that's going to be the start of it with Quinn, and do that prospect after prospect and develop the pipeline, then I think guys will stick with him. But not everybody will. You don't, as Coach, you're going to lose some. I don't even know if Trey Owens is going to stick around. He probably, I think he's going to stick around long enough to learn what he can and help Sark stabilize it. I can't guarantee he's going to stick around, because that guy probably can start for a lot of schools around the country.
That's kind of the double-edged sword. When you recruit a lot of, you know, very talented quarterbacks, of course, the on-field play should be, you know, it should mirror that. But at the same time, you're going to have a stable of quarterbacks. And what do you do with quarterbacks? Well, you play one, and you hope that you only need to play one. And so what does that mean for the rest of the guys? Well, they're probably itching to play elsewhere. And so, again, that Texas has been very fortunate so far with the offensive line, you know, with those numbers kind of skyrocketing up from 8 or 9 when Sarkisian took over the job to almost double that. You know, you only play 5 and you have 17 or 18 on the roster right now. Well, it makes sense for those guys who, again, are very talented. They're playing football at the University of Texas. They're going to have other options elsewhere. And in the world of NIL, you can return home and still receive a pretty sizable, you know, amount of NIL, right? And so it makes sense to consider that down the road. Luckily, it won't affect Texas this year, next year, or the year after that. I think they're going to have a very talented room there. But they'll continue to recruit in the sense of knowing what might occur down the road as well. Now, I think 2026 is a class in which you could still see 2 quarterbacks being taken, even with Diabelle in the fold. It would just make sense with Quinn departing. You have Arch coming up, and then Trey Owens, KJ Lacy down the road. It makes sense to me to add a second quarterback to that room, even with Diabelle. So that it's just all about having numbers. And right now, Texas hasn't been hit by portal attrition just yet, but you can expect that to happen at some point just because of how much talent is on campus at certain positions. And quarterback's a spot where we've seen plenty of movement throughout the transfer portal era, just guys trying to get on the field somewhere.
My fear is a guy like Brent Venables, a defensive-minded head coach, going after a guy like Trey Owens. And then you get him on campus, and then you pick his brain. You find out what Sark's thinking, what Sark's plan is, what Sark looks at, you know, defensively. That's my nightmare, you know. Somebody like that getting a hold of one of our quarterbacks and getting an inside look at what's going on behind the scenes.
That's the new age of college football, Coach. Hey, Belichick was famous for that. Bring up some dude just for that week. Put him on the squad. No, you're right about that, Coach. Very very savvy move there, it could be. All right, before we move on here and answer some more questions, let me thank our fantastic sponsor of the Winning Drive. We're very grateful to have our good friends at the South Point as sponsoring the Winning Drive. Really appreciate them being part of the On Texas football team. So, hey, Texas football fans, you can score an easy extra point this season when you get to the point at South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock, ladies and gentlemen. So that means that you right now is a perfect time for you to get on over there, and you can take advantage of their award-winning sales staff, because they do a great job of getting right to the point to get you the best deal possible. So score big today at South Point Dodge. Also, they are Austin's number one automotive everything. So if you're looking to sell your car, you can get South Point's best offer over the phone or online. You can get top dollar for any make and model vehicle, even if you don't buy it from South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge is home of the real deal, whether you're getting the lowest price on the best new Ram trucks or making sure you get the best value of your old car. That's southpointdodge.com, or visit them in South Austin off I-35 and you can visit them as well online at southpointdodge.com. So thank you very much for your support, South Point Dodge. All right, getting back to the questions here. We got one from Ivory Martin II. He says, do you think Sark takes 4 wide receivers even if we get more Lockett and French? Good Lord, that's a lot of wide receivers.
Yeah. Yeah, and right now I want to say yes, and I say that because, well, you could be losing 3 after this year, right? We knew Texas was pretty thin this year. You only had, you know, you're returning three, only returned 8 receptions from a year ago. You go out, you had Isaiah Bond, Matthew Golden, Silas Bolden. Those three could all depart, theoretically, if they all have great seasons. So to keep that room stocked up and loaded, it makes sense to go out and get 4 from this year's recruiting cycle. Of course, Texas is in it for a number of really talented guys. 2 of them were on campus this past weekend that Texas is hoping to get in the fold with Kelshawn Johnson, DeCorian Moore. 2 more will be coming in next week, and that's going to be Jamie French, Khalil Clockett. So when you think about it, I mean, Texas did good a year ago with multiple wide receivers. They got 4 in the 2024 class. Now you had 7 recruited guys, 3 more from the world of the portal after this year. You're losing Silas Bolden. You're likely losing Isaiah Bond. Now you got to find ways to keep that room stocked and loaded. 3 is the minimum. 4 I could absolutely see and I would expect.
Wow. That's a lot of wide receivers, but you're right about the – and that's positive attrition. If guys are leaving, going through your program, hitting the NFL, that's a good thing for Sark. That's absolutely. A lot of high-end wide receivers you're bringing in, but you're bringing in a lot of high-end quarterback talent. They go hand in hand. Makes it easy to recruit the other when you're bringing that in. Also, how about this? AJJ underscore sports says also KJ committed around the same time last year. Can you guys see this being a trend with quarterbacks over a year away committing early? Thank you for the question, AJJ underscore sports.
Absolutely. Look back to when Arch committed too. He was kind of out of the blue on a Tuesday morning, I believe, as well. I believe it was June 16th that he committed. So around this time, what, two and a half, three years ago, when he made his decision, I believe it was 2021 when he went live. But he committed around here. I know Trey Owens actually committed around January or February. He said, I know where I'm going. I'm not going to wait. There's no other places for me than the University of Texas. I'm securing my spot. He did it very early, but KJ Lacy did as well in the month of June. I think right now you want it, if you're Steve Sarkisian, to commit around this point of the season, of the offseason, going into your junior year. That way you can, you know, kind of be used as that focal point of the class to build around the quarterback, to attract out-of-state national prospects and say, yeah, we got a good thing on the field. We're developing. We're sending guys to the NFL. Oh, and you're going to be playing with a 5-star quarterback in the class right now. So that's kind of the vision I've seen for Steve Sarkisian, and it's paid off.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff there. All right, before we get back to some more of the questions, thank you guys for all the questions. I want to bring up something from that Joe Klatt interview that we saw earlier today was released, and with Steve Sarkisian. It's about maybe close to 40 minutes, and it's pretty good. A couple of the interesting nuggets from the interview. They were talking about the culture at Texas, which seems to be a regular topic. Anytime Sark is speaking to the media, he brings up the culture or someone asks him about the culture. But it's interesting, I never heard this description of it. Sark was talking about being vulnerable and telling the young men in his program about his experience and what he's gone through and the trials and tribulations, and that turned him into the man he is today. And they were talking about sobriety and all that kind of stuff. And they started, and he talked about vulnerability being a big part of the culture, because essentially, I'm paraphrasing, his vulnerability of sharing his story encourages the players to also be vulnerable there in the program and share their stories. And therefore, you get to care about each other in a more personal way because you care about their personal story and you know them. And there's a certain vulnerability you have in order to get that close. And they called it a culture of vulnerability. Essentially, that's the way they started to coin it, a culture of vulnerability. And it's interesting that Sark, is the quote from Sark. He said, not only did they buy into that idea of the culture, but he said, I felt like the leaders on that team last year elevated it. And we went to another space that I didn't know a college football team could go to. And he's not talking about necessarily on the field. I think he's talking about how close they got as a team and how that translated to wins on the field and how basically they played for one another is what he kind of was getting to because of how close they were. And then they took it to another level. And then he started to give examples of how that materialized on the field. But it was very interesting, Coach. What are your thoughts about culture of vulnerability? Maybe that's the secret sauce to the culture that sets Sark's program apart, because everybody's got a culture these days. What makes yours so special?
I think that's a great way to be as opposed to, I can't imagine Nick Saban ever making himself very vulnerable. I mean, you know, he is who he is. He's a boss. Everybody knows. But when you make yourself vulnerable, there's an old saying that in the coaching world that says kids don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Hmm. And when you make yourself vulnerable, you become a human like them. And, oh, okay, you know, some of the best my father was a minister. Some of the best ministers I've ever heard, pastors, preachers, whatever you want to call it, in my life, were guys who had been down the rough road, man. They've been through drugs, sex, alcohol, porn, whatever. I mean, they can relate. They know what you're going through because they've been through it themselves, you know. And they, therefore, it's you know, coach, you don't know what I'm going through, coach. You have no idea what, I know what you're going through, you know. And so I think that makes the players feel so much closer to the coaches and the coaches closer to the player because you get to know each other at a heart level, you know. And that's the key. The key to anything is to get the most out of anything is in the heart, you know. And I think Sark is meeting them on a heart level.
That's a great point. And you know what? It's crazy you bring up Nick Saban. Because I remember Nick Saban talking about, and actually players referencing, when he learned how vulnerability as a coach, how it was almost necessary at times to prove what you just brought up, coach, the players, they don't care how much you know, so they know how much you care. When he was with the Dolphins, and this is not a story to, you know, obviously talk trash about Nick Saban or to demean him in any way, because he learned from this and became a better coach afterwards. When he's with the Dolphins, and Heath Evans tells his story, he said the first day of 2-a-days, he said we had about a 3-hour-plus practice in the morning. He said guys were worn out. He said Geno James, one of their best offensive linemen at the time, comes in and collapses after practice. He said vomiting, all kinds of stuff. He said basically him and four of the linemen were trying to carry him from the locker room to the training room. And it's a moment of panic. Everybody's freaking out. And he says they don't know if he's going to die or what's going to go on. I mean, he's having a seizure, and anybody who's seen that is pretty traumatizing. And he said Nick Saban literally just starts walking in and steps over Geno James' convulsing body and walks up to his office. And when they asked Nick Saban about it, initially said, I didn't want to show weakness. I didn't want to show weak. He said, I was scared and panicked too, and I didn't really know what to do, and I didn't want to show the players I didn't know what to do. And he learned literally that, no, that's not the way to go about it. The human element matters here. Humanity matters. To forget being a coach, you're a human first. You're a father first. That's somebody's son, that kind of thing. And it changed the way he coached. It changed his philosophy on coaching, changed his philosophy on relationships, period, everything. Good so man. It goes to that that vulnerability thing. It's not, people don't talk about it. Like, well, we were in a very masculine sport. I don't know if there's a more masculine sport out there. I mean, you know, you don't show vulnerability. You know, guys, you know, you cry, you know, you don't cry in baseball. You don't cry very much in football either, right? You're supposed to be very masculine. And yet you're talking about this vulnerability, this sharing of emotion, which men don't show very often either. And that connects us on a deeper level. It actually was, I would encourage anybody to go check it out. That was one of probably my favorite parts of the interview, was him discussing the culture of vulnerability. And hearing you talk about it, coach, reminded me of the Saban story that changed Nick Saban's outlook on vulnerability as the secret sauce in a culture.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had not heard that story. I mean, football's a game where to be a coach, you got to be a leader of men, right? Coach, you know it firsthand. You got to be a guy that can step up there in the face of 50 to 80 or 100 guys and, you know, lead the room, command that respect. But at the same time, that respect has to be there. And if you can't separate what's on the field to the personal life, or at least join them at some points when it's necessary, I mean, it's going to be a tough time to – keep the troops in a line. So that's a remarkable story. I have to imagine if he was on the sideline for like the Bengals or Bills games, he probably would have been looking for the next play, right? When DeMar Hamlin was down. Yeah. My goodness, that's a crazy story.
It is. I mean, but like I said, I think it's something he learned from. He called a meeting later that night and he said, you know, the captain of the ship can never show fear or indecision. We've always got to have an answer. So I had to go upstairs. That's why I walked over Geno like that. I had to collect my thoughts and decide what was best for our team. That was according to Heath Evans and his account of things. So it, I remember that story, and I think it was kind of directly connected to the vulnerability conversation that we were having there. All right. Good stuff. Sorry. Go ahead, CJ.
I was going to say, it's always interesting what like the big turning points in most of these really successful college coaches are in their careers. You know, it, there's always one or two that you can point to and say, yeah, like they hit a pretty low, low. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they figured it out. They looked in the mirror. They changed something about their philosophy or the way that they approached the game of college football. And as a result, I mean, it's led them to, you know, equal or higher levels that you probably wouldn't have expected for Nick Saban. I mean, I have to imagine that was a big one for him. For Steve Sarkisian, he's been open about it. But when you leave Washington and you leave USC in the ways that he did, I mean, you don't have many options. And you bounce around the NFL, you get a chance from Nick Saban. And as a result, you're redirected into where you are now here at Texas to be, you know, the dice rolled on you once again, and it's paid off. And I have to imagine that there are plenty of other stories that you, none of us really know, because again, it's not, you know, situations that you'd want the public like to have thoughts about, right? You know, it's, that's a crazy story first and foremost. So I always think there's one or two moments for each coach that, you know, kind of forces them to sit back and say, all right, I know what I've been doing. It's not been working. I've got to change the way I approach this thing, and let's get this thing going again. Otherwise, I might not be in the right profession.
Yeah, and what I love about it is full circle, Sark gives Saban credit for saving his life, because he has a program that is extremely humanitarian, that all of his coaches, they have to get physicals because it was something that was close to his heart, because he, you know, I mean, was his father or something, I believe, had health issues early in his life. So he wanted all his coaches to get physicals. And Sark said, if I didn't get that physical, they would have never found my health issue. And I was a ticking time bomb, and I would have died. So it's that's vulnerability within the program, right? It's full circle. And it's, like I said, it's a beautiful thing. We all have these moments in our life where, you know, either we hit rock bottom, we've made bad decisions, we took a wrong turn. That does not define you. Right. You know what I mean? The struggle is what defines you. The struggle to get back to your purpose, to get back to, you know, the road to achieve your dreams, and to obviously do it in a way that helps others too. And I think that's the vulnerability thing we're talking about too. So it was deep. It was a deep discussion. Just want to throw that out there. Sorry if we got too deep on the show. That was not my intention, but it was good stuff. Good conversation there, Coach. Also, another little nugget he brought up. He asked Sark what was his worst and best play call. He said the best play call was the double reverse pass to JT Sanders in the Big 12 title game. And how about this, Coach? He said he told the coaches that week that if we end up in a 3rd-and-2, we're calling that play. I don't care where we are on the field. He said, we could be at our 10, we can be on their 10, don't matter. If it's 3rd-and-2, we going, because he said they'll probably go man. Basically, all the data had said they're going to give us man, and they'll probably not have safety help after we double reverse it, because the safety's going to come down to be a forced run defender, and it could leave a late releasing JT Sanders wide open, wide blank open. And he was wide blank open on 3rd-and-2. Coach, does that happen with that early in the week? You go, oh, we going with this, the money play, baby. We're going with it no matter what goes on. Did you do that as a coach? Did you have that situation happen?
Well, yeah. I would think I was going to do that. Then when the time came to it, sometimes I didn't have the guts to do it. You know, but when you look at how thorough Sark and that staff is. They knew if you know what coverage they're going to be in, if you know for a fact, then it's just a matter of just being able to get the ball, you know, hand it off, and those guys protected long enough to be able to get that pass. But, man, that's gutsy. That's what I love about this guy. I mean, one of the many things I love about Sark. Some guys, yeah, you can draw it up. It's easy to sit there with a dip of snuff in your mouth, you know, sitting back and just drawing, oh, yeah, man, this is going to be it, you know, 3rd-and-2, yeah. Let's do it. And then you're in the Big 12 championship game trying to get into the playoffs. Yeah, that's big time, man. That's big time.
Kudos to him. I agree, Coach. That's what I sounds like, man, to say that. He's like, early on in the week, I think he says the day, but I'm not sure. He's like, no, I told the staff, 3rd and 2, don't matter where. My thing was the gutsiest part, no matter where we are on the field. I'm like, whoa, now we pass midfield. Let's do that. He's like, no, even if we're in our deep in our own territory, 3rd and 2, I'm like, ooh, thank God they were not deep in their own territory, 3rd and 2. Because Sark, he's got stones the size of smart cars, man. I love it.
Hey, I appreciate the aggression as well. We see it all the time that when the script, in those first drives, first, second drives, the first quarters, he goes for it more times than they don't once they cross midfield. He doesn't like settling for field goals to start games. So I love that aggression. But I am kind of eager to hear what, if he had an answer for that worst play call.
He said the USC versus Texas 4th down play call. They took Reggie Bush off the field. So I think that's the one he's talking about, if I believe. That was his worst play call. That's what he said. Yeah.
Worked out well for Texas on both ends. So, hey, all right.
I think ultimately he just – yeah, I think he might have just thrown that one in there. I don't know if that's the real worst play call he's ever had.
It was a bad one.
He said he was averaging go back and watch it. He said they were averaging over 10 yards per play running that power concept. So that's why he was so confident running it, Coach. But now you know how that go. Everybody's got plans so they get punched in the mouth. All right, there you go. That was a couple of – go check it out. It actually was a really good interview. Joe Klatt. Oh, one little nugget. Joe Klatt also said this. The culture of Texas, he visited Texas, and he visited a lot of other programs around the country, obviously doing research, due diligence for his broadcast. And he said the culture at Texas was special. He said it really felt like the team, they cared about each other, kind of getting back to the vulnerability thing. He said the only culture that he believes was on par, that he visited personally, that was on par with the Texas culture was Michigan. What Joe Klatt said. So he claims the only culture that was as good as Texas culture last year that he got a chance to experience was the Michigan culture, and they were your national champions last year. So Sark's got that thing rolling, definitely from a culture perspective. All right, let's get to some more of the questions here. Thank you guys for loading these up. Vivek B wants to know, is Dia Bell better than KJ Lacy in y'all's opinion? He clearly has a better size profile.
Yeah, I mean, KJ's growing. I mean, I think he's up to about 6'1", 185. I know Diabelle's listed at 6'2", 195. So frame, yeah, I don't think that really matters for Steve Sarkisian. We've seen him recruit guys like Malik Murphy and Trey Owens who are 6'4", 6'5", you know, anywhere up to about 235 or 240 versus guys like Bryce Young. And I don't want to throw KJ in there because he's grown, but at the time, KJ was only about 5'11", Bryce Young about the same size. So I don't think it necessarily matters what the size of the quarterback is. Of course, it's the arm strength. And what's interesting to me is right now, I think KJ Lacy is a little bit more refined in terms of the 1-2-3 throw, you know, the three-step drop, get to my back foot. Getting in rhythm is something I think he's just a little bit more polished at right now. Obviously, I mean, Diabelle's a sophomore in high school, so he's got that year-up advantage on him at the moment. I think both are really talented, making the throws on the run, finding ways to extend plays as well. It wasn't, you know, too long ago where Sarkisian, you know, it was reported that whenever he first watched KJ Lacy's tape, he wrote down Bryce Young 2.0. This is the guy that I want in the class. And he had the opportunity to go out and recruit Keelan Russell and some of these other guys in 25 class, and he said, no. I'm going to trust my early evaluation. I'm going to trust what we have right now with Coach Milwee, and we're going to keep KJ in our class despite, you know, Auburn, Oregon, Ole Miss, a number of really talented other programs. USC wanted to get in with KJ Lacy. They stayed firm with one another, and obviously that's a good connection there. So I like both quarterbacks. I think both are a bit unique. There's some similarities there, but long-term, it's going to be interesting to see how else both mature physically before they get to campus, before really comparing one another.
Yeah, good stuff there. Yeah, I like both of them. It's kind of tough to compare the quarterbacks like that, I'll admit, because that's why I always say every quarterback has their X-Man ability, and I kind of break it down from there because everybody's got their signature trait, skill, something they do as well, not better than their peers. But good stuff there. Appreciate the question. How about this one from Jedi Master Bevo? Anyone else feel like this is the first domino to fall. I know it's for 2026, but would 2025 guys start hopping on this train? Do you think that this, even though it's a 2026 commitment, brings some momentum for more to 2025 guys, CJ?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Texas earned a commitment from Caleb Chester, what, 6 days ago? So they certainly had, some momentum going. We knew June was going to be a hot month for them, literally and metaphorically there. But, this weekend, this past weekend, I four silence come out of it. We had four outstanding highs at the moment. Next weekend, I could certainly see them adding two, potentially three as well. So I really like where Texas is. We got a number of commitments coming up the turn of the calendar into June or into July as well. I mean, you look at Dijon Lee, June 28th, Smith Orogbo, July 1st, Marco Jones, June 2nd, Zion Williams, July 4th. There's a number of guys I could see Texas adding two, maybe three guys from that fold right now. So I like where Texas is at. The ball is going to get going, and we'll certainly see that momentum start coming soon. That those dominoes are going to fall really quickly.
All right, good stuff there. Appreciate you, CJ. Oh, Robert Pope, thank you very much for the super chat, Robert. We appreciate that. This is for CJ, though. CJ, percent that DK Moore is a high, and also – yeah, I appreciate that, Robert Pope. I think it kind of goes back to our initial conversation, and Chris Bennett wants to know, CJ, do recruits usually bring that many family members on recruiting visits? Thank you very much, CB. Glad you joined us, brother. Yeah, Coach talked about it too. Coach hadn't seen that. Is DK Moore one of them? Is he one of those?
Listen, he might be. He might be. All I know is he and Texas had a very good time together on the official visit this past weekend. I think it's very telling that one, Sarkisian was basically attached to his tit a little bit on the trip. At a dinner Friday night, and as well as having, 10, 11 family members make that trip with him, kind of give an indication of how important seeing the University of Texas was, meeting Steve Sarkisian and seeing everything that Texas football had to offer. So read into that as you will, but all I can say is that visit went very well for Texas and DeCorian Moore.
All right, good stuff there, CJ. How about this one? Jay Shipley. I don't know if that's kinfolk, Coach. Watching for
that's a team I fixed that. That's up around Graham, Texas, right there, which is nice. Where my very first coaching job was, Graham Steers. And that's where Jay's living out on the lake out there.
Living that lake life, baby. That's a good life right there. So is this kinfolk or is this just another Shipley?
Oh, it probably is. You know us Shipleys, But Jordan actually had a ranch on that came down on PK on the north. East side of PK, so we spent a lot of time up there. Okay. Yeah, Graham, I tell people, I always embarrass my wife, but Jordan wasn't born in Graham, but he was conceived in Graham. He was born in Temple. I went to work for Bob McQueen, legendary Bob McQueen at Temple High. Good. Yeah.
Oh, man, that was a good one.
Appreciate you. I love watch that show, buddy.
All right, good stuff there, Coach. And thank you, Jay, for the shout out there. I think this is, I hope I pronounce this right, Tedapade one. If I mispronounce it, I apologize. I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce it. Let me know. Give me a phonetic spelling there and hook me up. Educate me. So that Rod Barrett says, Dia Bell remind you of a more past instinctive Corby Jones. Bro, what a reference. Good. I'll admit, I got to go back and watch Corby Jones' film just to make sure I can give you an accurate breakdown on that. Because I would do that tonight. That's a hell of a – because I'm sure Corby was shorter, though, right? Dibbell's what, 6'2", 6', what is he, 6'2", 6'3", somewhere around there?
Right.
I don't know if Corby was that tall, just physically. But I'll go back and watch the playing style. You may be talking about their playing style and how they – so I'll go back and look at that. More – pass instinctive Corby Jones. I like that reference though. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. I got one here actually that came out of the live chat here, and it was from Vivek. He says, Rod, do you think Sark has solved his red zone problems? I would just say Coach and I did a really good football theory about Texas red zone issues. Actually, it was a two-parter, so I won't go deep into it here, but I do think I'll play this. Sark, he says obsession is his kind of new mantra for this season, obsessed with winning a championship. I think he's also obsessed with solving their red zone issues. Guys, and this actually will bring us to another topic I wanted to hit. Have you guys seen some of the way too early All-Americans preseason selections? Bert Auburn, Pro Football Focus had one, and Bert Auburn, I believe, made the way too early All-American list for Pro Football Focus. And I saw Phil Steele had a 14 All-American list, preseason All-American selections, and he had Bert Auburn, I believe, as a second team All-American in his preseason All-Americans. So a lot of people believe, or at least based on these selections, that Bert Auburn might go into the SEC as the best kicker potentially in the SEC. If not the best, he's going to be one of them. And here's my and maybe this is flawed logic, but if Bert Auburn's an All-American at the end of the year, does that mean that Texas still had some red zone issues?
Yes. The answer is yes.
I can tell you this. He may not win All-American. But if there's an All-American Hairdo Award, he's
not hey, that's for the marketing coach, the NIL. He's recognizable. Everybody knows how Bert Auburn looks.
What was his name? The Steelers safety with the long hair?
Palomalu.
Palomalu. Yeah, he's right. Troy
Palomalu. Yeah. He made it with that. Was it Pearl? I can't remember the name of the shampoo he did. But
was Palomalu, it Head and Shoulders? Who was
he's got Head and Shoulders lined up for a lifetime deal, yeah. Coach.
Yeah,
you're right. You're right about that, coach. Hey, that's a built-in endorsement, coach. You're right about it. Make it happen. Come on, UT, make that happen. That's good money for Bert Auburn. But no, I mean, is this flawed logic? Because I'm not saying he's not going to be efficient and really good. I think he's going to be efficient and really good. But if he's an All-America, that means you also have the volume, and that's why last year he was breaking records, conference records, and program records because of the volume of kicks he was getting. Thank God Sark recognized, hey, our red zone offense, we're pretty bad. 90th in the country in red zone offense, 120th in touchdown percentage in the red zone. Let's just give it to Bert Auburn and take those points and win with complimentary football. And we know, we just talked about how aggressive Sark is. You know, that pained him. That was painful for Sark to have to let Bert Auburn kick them field goals, but it shows you his maturity as a coach, and he wants to win more than anything. His ego, he decided to let his ego take a back seat to Bert Auburn getting them points, and we're grateful for it. But the one thing about the red zone, it can't get worse than last year because you were 120th in the country in touchdown precision red zone. So you ain't going to get much worse than that. 90th in red zone offense. The troubling thing is the trend, right? The troubling thing is you were top five in the country in touchdown percentage in the red zone in 2021. You were 65th in touchdown percentage in the red zone in 2022, and you were 120th in 2023. So the trend is what's troubling. The team is better. More talent. Sark is better as a coach. Team is better. Program is better. Culture is better. Red zone keeps getting worse. Could just be a post-Bijan Rojo hangover. That's kind of one of the things that Coach Shipley and I hypothesized and theorized in football theory, but nobody knows. I don't think Sark knows. I think Sark, that's one of his projects this offseason. He's going to try to figure it out. I don't think he knows, CJ, though. I don't think he knows.
I hate saying this, but, you know, kind of the less that we see Bert Auburn, the better. Unless the fight song is playing and the fans are clapping, right? I'm excited for it because I do think, given the history of this staff and what we've seen from year to year, when there is a glaring issue, it gets resolved. And this glaring issue from 23 to 24 is the red zone. Last year was more on the defensive side. It was getting off the ball or getting off the field on third and fourth downs. Texas turned into the best, third down defense in all of the country. So this year, again, Rod, you can't get worse in the red zone than what we saw last year. So I'm hopeful, again, you'll be playing some really talented defenses. If that's the case, you take that next step. Texas should always be able to put points on the board with this offense, with this playmakers, with this kicker. The issue is those need to be 6 and 7 points rather than 3.
Well, here's my opinion. If we're playing for a national championship and Bert Auburn is an All-American, it's because he's made clutch kicks that have won close games, big games, and he's made kicks from a long distance, and those two things. You know, you I think being an All-American kicker isn't necessarily just about your field goal percentage. It's being able to kick in the clutch, one, to win games when everything's on the line, and number two, being able to kick a field goal when most people don't even think you'll go for it. I was lucky enough I wasn't at Abilene Christian when a guy named Ove Johansson kicked it, but I've seen it many times, and I caught some kicks for him when I was a little kid. He kicked a 69-yard field goal in a game against East Texas State University at Shotwell Stadium in Abilene. Standing there, no, they thought, fake, oh, he ain't going to kick it 69 yards, man. That was back, I think the goal line, I think maybe the goalposts were on the goal line at that time. If I'm not that's a long, I mean, you're on the other side of the 50. I mean, it's a long kick.
Coach, they got footage of this kick?
Do what?
They got footage of this thing anywhere?
Oh, yeah.
Reel it up?
It's about 1973, 70.
Oh, yeah.
So, something like that. Man, no, yeah, I think that's right. I can't remember for sure.
That's crazy.
Yeah, 69 yards, still the record. No, it was maybe 76 because – a guy I think named Franklin maybe from Texas A&M kicked like a 67 yarder that day. Ove Johansson kicked a 69 yarder in the stadium. Must have been a big northern blew in that day or something.
That is crazy. 69 yards? That's crazy.
69. Look at soccer player from Sweden, and we didn't even have a soccer team.
I mean, did he kick at the next level? Like, where is this dude now?
Yeah,
I mean,
he did.
Where'd he go?
Unfortunately, he passed away last year, but. He did kick. Consistency was his problem. He had the leg strength, no doubt. But he was a soccer player. I don't even know why he came to Abilene Christian. Some missionary probably brought him over here. And then he just came out there one day and started kicking. They said it sounded like an explosion every time he kicked. But yeah, that's what Bert Auburn's got to kick, some long ones and clutch ones to be an All-American and us play for a national championship.
Now, that's a good point, Coach. You're right about that. He can just have, like, in big primetime games,
yep.
Georgia, Michigan, stuff like that. You become a household name like that, you ain't going to be as household name as Dicker the Kicker because no kicker ever will, but you'll be recognizable. So, I said, Coach ain't lying. I just looked it up. Hey, there you go.
Ove Johansson.
Hey, we trust Coach. Coach is the historian on the show and the comic relief. All right, before we get out of here, ATX Dubstep says, I think the 1-2 punch at running back is going to solve a lot of red zone problems. Coach and I talked about this too. I think the pony package is also going to solve a lot of red zone problems. I think the pony package is really good. Go check out that Football Theory. Coach and I break that down as to why this case. There's a link to the best red zone offenses in the NFL, which Sark also is a fan of because those are also Shanahan offenses. All right, before we get out of here, let's thank our sponsor one more time. We are so grateful for the folks over at South Point Dodge for all their support and for them sponsoring the winning drive. So, Texas football fans, you can score an easy extra point this season when you get to the point at South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock and their award-winning sales staff. They don't play games and they're not about gimmicks at all. They just want to get straight to the point by getting you the best deal possible. So, score big today at South Point Dodge. And remember, they're Austin's number one automotive everything. So, if you're looking to sell your car, you can get South Point's best offer over the phone or online. You can get top dollar for any make and model vehicle, even if you didn't buy it from South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge is home of the real deal, whether you're getting the lowest price on the best new Ram trucks or making sure you get the best value for your old car. Visit them today online at southpointdodge.com, or you can go visit them in person off I-35 in South Austin at southpointdodge.com. Get to the point at South Point. All right, thank you very much to South Point Dodge for all of their – oh, there you go. Man, look at Matthew pulling it up. Shout out. Look at that.
Wow.
See?
Look at that.
Showing the love. What a reference on the show. What a reference, Coach. Look at that.
Yeah, like I said, he passed away. He also played with Wilbur Montgomery, who I think Abilene Christian won the national championship that year. Wilbur Montgomery – no, Wilbur Montgomery – when Wilbur was a freshman – had 31 touchdowns. That's why he wore number 31 for the Philadelphia Eagles. Of course, he was an all-pro for the Eagles. But a little Abilene Christian had some talent, man.
That's crazy.
That's a great story, Coach. I learn something new every day. Hanging out with Coach, learn something new. Beautiful thing. Hopefully you guys learned something new as well. And hopefully we got a chance to get to as many of the questions Appreciate you guys for all your participation. Makes the show awesome. You guys are great. Appreciate you helping us build this community, this family here at On Texas Football. Thanks to my man Matthew behind the scenes. Without Matthew, none of this would be possible. Trust me, he's the hardest, one of the hardest working members of this family. Also want to thank Coach for all of his wisdom. Thank CJ for all of his time and all of those nice nuggets of information on recruiting. Also want to thank our sponsor once again over at South Point Dodge. Tomorrow, you got coffee and football. Starting up at 8, you don't want to miss that. Coffee and football coming up. Also, we'll have a live stream at 7 tomorrow night, so you don't want to miss that as well. But just stay tuned on TexasFootball.com, on Texas Football, the YouTube channel. And until next time, same time, same channel, hook 'em horns.